NWP Radio.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project.
NWP.
Welcome, listeners. This is NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is February 16th, 2024, and we are talking with Leticia Britos Cavagnaro, author of the book Experiments in Reflection: How to See the Present, Reconsider the Past, and Shape the Future. Hello, Leticia.
Hi, Tanya. So great to be here with you.
It's so great to meet you. Could you maybe just start by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Sure. So I work at the D School at Stanford. I like to say that I'm a scientist turned designer, and always a learner and an educator at heart. I started my career as a biologist, and I made my way, I found my place at the D School, and I've been working there for a few years now. My work is looking at designing and prototyping futures of learning, imagining what learning could be. So that's, you know, a through line through all of the roles that I have at the D School, which include teaching in the Masters of Design, teaching and doing running programs for university students outside of Stanford with the University Innovation Fellows Program, and also working with educators through our Teaching and Learning Studio.
I think our listeners are probably already on the edges of their seats, because we are also teachers who are often thinking about what learning could look like. So that's excellent.
Wonderful.
We also always like to ask you a little personal question. And since it's February, my personal question for you is, what is something that everyone who knows that you love?
Wow. Okay. So one thing for sure, basketball. So basketball has been instrumental in my life since I was 10 years old, and I found my way into a basketball practice very serendipitously. And since then, it has been integral in like my growing up as a learner, and also the friendships that I've developed. And to this day, I still play. Now I play in a veterans league, and I play when I come here to where I'm right now. I'm in Uruguay, in my home country. And when I come, I get to play with the same friends that I play when I was 16. And I also get to play with my 12-year-old niece, who's taller than me and like an amazing basketball player. So I love basketball.
That is excellent. And what a great, rich answer. Thank you. I really have been looking forward to talking with you today about experiments and reflection. I'd like you to be able to say in your own words, like a sort of introduction to the book. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So here's the thing, right? Like, you can go about life being efficient, ticking things off your to-do list, moving very fast, or you can take a pause and unleash the power of reflection to really make the most out of your life, your experiences, your relationships. And so this book, Experiments in Reflection, is my attempt to help you in doing just that, right? And providing readers with actionable tools to reflect, but also a way to rethink what reflection means, right? Because it's really interesting. Reflection is one of those suitcase words, as Marvin Minsky coined. And one of those words that we all think about, we know what they mean, but actually we really need to unpack it, you know, because we might be thinking about different things, right? Like, so in the book, I invite readers to think of reflection not only as looking at the past, but how reflection can help us understand and notice more and different things about the present and about the world and about ourselves, and also shape the future for ourselves and for others, right? Like, so I've seen how deepening your reflection skills can have a profound effect on the young people that I teach at Stanford and beyond. I've taken some of those techniques and exercises and put them in book format so that, you know, the reader can access those and put them into practice.
So you've sort of introduced the next topic I want to talk about, but I noticed right away that the book is noticing, divided into these three parts: noticing, making sense, and envisioning. And I have to tell you that I'm particularly excited about reflecting forward, in part because I once was in a project where I sort of got taken to task for saying that I was reflecting forward. People said, you can't do that. So I'm recording this, and people are going to know you can reflect forward. But why don't you tell us a little bit more about how the book works in these three parts?
Yes, absolutely. So those three dimensions that you mentioned are dimensions of this way of looking at reflection that I'm embedding in the book in an experiential way. So notice is about using reflection as a tool for awareness, right? Like thinking about developing your ability to be present, to focus your attention and refocus your attention. In kind of like center yourself in the present moment in heighten your capacity to notice important details about the world and about yourself. Then making sense, it's about revealing what's not obvious, revealing what's beneath the surface, right? And really digging deeper to uncover the potential meanings and more, hopefully more than one meaning, and exploring possibilities in what we notice, right? And you can use this experiment or this dimension where you're puzzling over something or a situation, an interaction, and you're trying to kind of like really go beyond what's obvious or get unstuck, right? And then envision, as you mentioned, right? Like it's kind of like counterintuitive at times, and you're kind of like, wait, how can we reflect on something that hasn't happened, that we don't know? But I should say that reflecting forward is not only possible, it's necessary, right? Like we must do that, and we must get used to visiting the future as often as we can. And this last invitation I'm borrowing from my dear colleague Lisa K. Solomon from the D School, because if we think about it, like you could think that reflection and imagination are at odds, right? Like that. But actually, that they can complement one another and reinforce one another. We cannot create a future that we have not imagined, right? Like, so reflecting forward is about going from thinking about the future as the future that is going to happen to you, and reframing that into kind of like imagine many possible futures, and deciding like what are futures that we'd like to work towards, and what are futures that we must avoid, right? Like, so it's about not imposing your will into the future and or trying to kind of like predict what's going to happen, but really imagining possibilities. So that's what reflecting forward and envisioning is about.
Excellent. So excited to talk to you. This book is great. It's a sort of workbook almost with a lot of experiments for readers to try. Why did you think a book about reflection should be organized around experiments?
Yes. So one thing, as I, set out to write this book, one thing that was really important to me, and that I worked really hard to achieve, is that the book should embody the pedagogy of the D School, where we invite the students to learn by doing, right? And there's ample data to support that this is how we really learn, right? So for me, structuring the book as experiments, and by the way, these are experiments that like I invite people to kind of like in these three dimensions, but like also to jump and see what works for you or what are you drawn to in a particular moment. So it's not linear either, but it's a way to invite readers to dive in first and try something that centers their experience, right? And then from their thoughts, their ideas, their assumptions, their wonders, what they care about, then once you've made those connections and surfaced those, then the additional information that I include in the book and the insights that I share from other experimenters to unpack each experiment, then those become more meaningful, right? Immediately because you're starting from your experiment, for your experience.
I really loved reading the book and playing with it. And I love a lot of the experiments, and some of them are like I'm going to do right now, and some I thought, oh, I'll use these in a professional learning experience sometime in the future. I'm particularly enamored at this moment of the experiment, don't finish what you start. I think that's lovely. But do you have a favorite experiment that you like to tell people about to explain your work?
Yeah, well, as you can imagine, that's a difficult question, right? Because I love them all, but I'll take your framing of say like at this moment. So I'm gonna tell you my favorite experiment at this moment right now. Tomorrow it might be a different one. But I love find questions to your answers. That's experiment number six out of the making sense dimension. And I love it because it's a mix of simplicity and power, right? And the essence of what that experiment is to expand your ability to ask questions and reflect on kind of like the kinds of questions that you ask, but also kind of like your tendency to kind of like sometimes like lean into more of like answers and education often like, points us to kind of like, okay, what we need to go is to kind of like what the direction that we need to go is to know, right? Like we need to go towards answers. Right, but it's really the questions where I think the magic lies. And just like earlier today, I was reading on LinkedIn a post by Scott Dorley, who's the D School's creative director, a brilliant colleague, and he was mentioning a quote, a concept from mid-century media theorist Marshall McLuhan. And his invitation or provocation was to put the questions in the schools. And his premise, and I'm looking at right now at the post by Scott, is if answers, AKA the world's information, are free to find outside schools, then what are schools for? Right? And the only thing left is working on questions worth pursuing. What are the questions that are worth pursuing? And so I think this is key, right? Like, and it's uncomfortable, right? So in this exercise, I invite you to kind of like lean into asking lots of questions and staying there, not even like trying to answer the questions and grapple with like what do these questions unlock? And also exploring like different kinds of questions. For instance, the question, what if, right? It really invites us to consider possibilities, right? What you're asking is framed as a hypothesis. It implies that you're temporarily suspending judgment and disbelief, right? Like, so this can work really great in conversation with others to create a space where it feels safe to propose ideas or scenarios, right? And for others to consider. But it's equally powerful to use that same framing to get past our own internal censor, right? Because we ha always have that voice that is quick to tell us, right? Like, that bold idea that you're starting to think will never work, right? Before it even like gets out of your mind, right? So that's a really great way to kind of like or really great example of the power of questions. So that's my current favorite experiment.
Excellent. That's a great one too. We talk about that one at well at that concept, and this is a great tool for us at my job. We are often talking about questioners versus assumption makers, and how much you miss if you just assume you know why something happened or what someone meant. So I really like that one too. Our audience is made up largely of educators. Do you have any thoughts or advice about what might be particularly useful in this book for educators?
Yes, absolutely. And educators are my favorite people to work with.
Yeah, mine too.
And if an educator can get their students to be better at reflection, like their job becomes infinitely easier, right? Like, because I think reflection is at the core of learning. And I know that many educators who are listening already incorporate moments of reflection in their classes. But what I found through my teaching, my experience, and I've done some informal experiments on this and collecting data, is that providing the opportunity to reflect for students is necessary but not sufficient. We also need to provide students with guidance and resources and to get better at reflecting and understanding what does it mean to reflect well, what is a good reflection, right? And here's where I think the book, through the three collection of experiments and those three dimensions, can really help, right? Like add more nuance, more resources, because each collection adds depth to how we reflect. And also some of these reflection activities can be used by educators to get students out in the world and moving, not just classroom activities, right? And I think that contrary to, you know, popular belief or, you know, some conceptions that we have of reflection, or reflection is not only an introspective in your head activity. It's not about going in and away from the world. It's about bringing the world in, right? Like going out, bring the world in. So that's an important thing. Like many of these exercises are kind of like out in the world. And beyond the direct application to the classroom, I think educators can use the activities in the book to reflect on their own practice, right? And I know that teachers who will pick up this book will be always in search of ways to become better teachers. So I think experiments in reflection will add to their toolkit and contribute to their growth journey as professionals. So I'm hoping that, and also hoping that the activities that I'm presenting can be an inspiration for educators to create their own new reflection experiments. That's something that I love when someone tells me, oh, I took, you know, your experiment and I created this other thing. It's like, and that's what I love, right? Like taking things and kind of like replicating them or taking them in a different place.
You said so many things that will appeal to National Writing Project educators. I mean, we talk about the difference between assigning writing and teaching writing, the difference between the opportunity to write and the support to learn how to write. And that this idea of the importance of reflection and the framing of reflection is going out and coming back. And then, of course, anybody who's in the National Writing Project is an educator who's sort of committed to a lifetime of getting better and always looking for new and interesting tools. And they will hear in my voice, I love this book and they should have it.
Yeah, thank you.
I talk to a lot of researchers and writers, and in my experience, people often have hopes and dreams, or we might say they reflect forward about the life that their book might have in the world. What hopes and dreams do you have for this beautiful, very well-designed little book?
Thank you. Thank you for the kind words. And yes, and I hope that I have, or it would make me immensely happy if the book gets more people to fall in love with experimentation as a way to develop a fuller life, right? Like whether you're an educator, you have a different profession, I think like having an experimental mindset really kind of like, we have evidence, right? It serves us so well when we're children, we're learning very key skills and very difficult skills like walking and speaking. And then we sort of like forget that that's actually how we learn, right? Like a lot. So I think I'm hoping that that, you know, sparking the experimentation bug in people is what I wish.
Well, you sparked it in me. I'm sure that this conversation will spark people's curiosity and want them to know or convince them that they need this book. So where can they find this book, Leticia?
Yeah, well, I hope at least I piqued their interest in checking it out. The book came out in November, and you can find it at all the usual places, you know, like Amazon, but also bookshop.org, for instance, which supports local bookstores.
And or the project.
Is that?
It also supports the National Writing Project. We encourage our listeners to use Bookshop.
Great. Excellent. So go to bookshop.org for sure. Or you can actually walk into a physical bookstore, right? Imagine that. And you might find it, because that I can't tell that if that it's in all the bookstores. But like a friend recently texted me a photo of the book at a bookstore in Greenville, South Carolina. It made me so happy.
That's right? Excellent.
So amazing. And you can also get discounted books in bulk at Porchlight. So that's an option as well. And I should mention that if you get the audiobook version as well, which I think is not either or, it could be like, you know, a compliment, which I narrated. It was a lot of fun, by the way. It comes with a beautiful PDF that excerpts all the methods from the 12 experiments. And I can see how a teacher could grab those and insert them into a lesson. So that's kind of like a neat additional resource, I should say.
It is indeed. Wow. That time went by so fast, Leticia. It was so fun to talk to you about this book. Thank you for your time. Thank you for creating this beautiful resource for people. And thanks for coming on NWP Radio today.
Thank you, Tanya, for the opportunity to share with your listeners.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. NWP. NWP Radio.